I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
And the naval battle of Leyte Gulf, Philippine Islands, October 23rd to October 26, 1944. That is our subject. And here is our man, Rick Bigelow. He's even got a theme song. Patent attorney extraordinaire, but our historian. Rick, welcome back to the Bob Cadaro Show. How are you?
Doing fine, Bob. Glad to be with you.
All right, let's fire away. Talk to us.
Okay, so in October 16th, 1944, a huge fleet leaves New Guinea and headed for the Philippines. We got 12 battleships, 23 aircraft carriers, 100 cruisers, 150,000 troops, 1,000 aircraft. We're heading into the island of Leyte in the Philippines. And on the 20th of October, the task force lands. MacArthur comes ashore and gives his famous speech about people of the Philippines. I have returned.
Now, let me ask you, Rick, was that actually filmed twice?
I thought it was filmed three times.
Oh, okay. It didn't turn out quite right. And by the way, egotistical as it may be, doing it right had an effect because it was going to be shown worldwide.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, he came ashore on one of these landing craft and it hit a little sandbar right before it got to the beach because he was supposed to, pull up to the beach and just step off into the sand. So it ran aground on a little sandbar and he had to wade in. And everybody was all concerned about that. But then MacArthur figured that this would have a positive effect, showing that the Supreme Commander wasn't afraid to get a little bit wet to join the troops on the beach. So,
well, and him actually wading through the water is iconic in and of itself.
That's exactly right. And of course, it happened several times because they had to get it just right. But with that, the troops come ashore and the Japanese were not expecting them there. The Japanese thought maybe they'd land on Mindanao down in the south or up in Luzon, up in the northern part of the Philippines. And of course, the Philippines is an amalgam of 7,000 different islands. So there are a lot of different places they could have landed. And what happened was Halsey's aircraft carrier and his flyers were going all over the Philippines in the days and weeks leading up to the invasion. And they said, we're not seeing very many Japanese aircraft on the Philippines, and nobody's coming up to oppose us when we fly over. So Leyte looks like a really good spot. There aren't many troops there. There's good beaches, and so they changed the they were initially supposed to land in Mindanao, but they decided to land a little bit further north up at Leyte. So this pretty much caught the Japanese by surprise, and MacArthur's forces moved inland fairly quickly. The Japanese decided they needed to do something to counter this, and so they sortied three huge fleets to go after the Americans, and they were hoping to catch all the transports and all the ships in Leyte Gulf so that they could basically wipe out the landing forces. And of course the landing forces were already there, but what's really important is the follow-on logistics effort that were all in the transports and the large amphibious ships.
So I'm telling Bulldog, if he would, to put the map back up, Bulldog. He's got some texts there. But Bulldog, put the map back up. For those of you watching on the live stream, you can get a better picture of what Rick's talking about. But go ahead, Rick. Sorry.
Okay, so the Japanese sent three huge fleets out to counter the Americans. And basically what happened was they said there were going to be four major engagements during the naval battle of Leyte Gulf. And the thing is with the troops on shore who were already pushing inward had no idea all this stuff was going on over the horizon. So one of the major forces was Imperial Japanese Navy Admiral Kurita. His center force sailed into the Subban Sea. That force included the two giant battleships, the Yamato and the Musashi, with their 18-inch guns. And 18-inch guns could fire and hit targets 26 miles away. Whereas our battleships with 16-inch guns could only hit targets about 20 miles away. They didn't have any carriers. The Japanese Navy, as a result of the battles at Midway and the Philippine Sea, were short of carriers. Halsey's carrier groups, he had four carrier groups with him. He had actually had enough carrier groups that he sent one of them under Vice Admiral John McCain, who was Senator John McCain's grandfather. He had sent him back to Ulithi about 1,000 miles away to refuel and then come back. So planes from the Intrepid and the Cabot sank the Musashi, and of course the Japanese figured that these super battleships were invulnerable to carrier plane attack, but the Americans shot so many torpedoes into the Musashi that it sank. So at this point in time, Kurita retreats, and he turns around and heads back through the straits. And Halsey thinks that Kurita's force has left the battle permanently. So at this point in time, Halsey, who in this particular battle, he reported to Nimitz. He was only on loan to MacArthur for this operation going into the Philippines. So Nimitz had told them, you know, support MacArthur's landing, but if you get the opportunity and you see the opportunity to destroy the Japanese carrier fleet, go ahead and take it. So they find out that there's a large Japanese carrier fleet that's way up to the north. So Halsey leaves the beachhead and heads up north to go after the Ozawa's carrier fleet.
Now, let me ask you, Rick, at this point, we had already fully compromised or pretty fully compromised Japanese communications. So that would play a part in all we were doing, right?
Yeah, that's right. We pretty much knew what was going on. We had broken the Japanese naval code as early as the Battle of Midway, and so we pretty much knew what they were doing. But we weren't getting 100% information. Mm-hmm. We were getting maybe 20 or 30%, and we figured out what they were doing. We didn't really know that that the Japanese had sortied that large a force, and even though the Japanese Navy was down considerably at this point in time, it was still a large and powerful force. But a bunch of American submarines noticed the Japanese fleet that was coming in from Singapore, and they actually sank several of them, and that let the Americans know for sure that the Japanese were coming in. So as darkness approached, Kurita turned around his force and headed back through the San Bernardino Strait and eventually to the east coast of Samar, which is the island just to the north of Leyte. So IJN, Imperial Japanese Navy, land-based planes attack and sink the U.S. carrier Princeton and heavily damaged the cruiser Birmingham. So at the same time, there is a southern force under Japanese Admiral Nishimura's southern force approaches Leyte from the southwest. And the whole idea was the central force and the southern force would meet up outside of Leyte, and they would crush the American ships at the beachhead. Nishimura's southern force was huge, had two battleships. It was joined by another force that had another three battleships. They had about a dozen destroyers and cruisers. The 7th Fleet battleship force under Rear Admiral Oldendorf waited for them and basically set up a trap and ambushed them as they were coming in a night battle. Oldendorf's force had 6 battleships, 4 cruisers, actually 8 cruisers and 28 destroyers, and a bunch of PT boats. So this was the last battleship-to-battleship fight of World War II, and actually probably the last battleship-to-battleship fight in world history.
Yeah.
The U.S. forces destroyed the Southern force in a night battle, and what was left of them retreated. This is also interesting and noteworthy in that this was the first time that organized attacks by Japanese Navy special forces, known as the kamikazes, actually went after American shipping. So the next thing that happens is the battle off Samar on October 25th, 1944.
All right. Rick, at that point, we'll take a break. Bob Cadaro, WILK, Rick Bigelow is our guest. The battle for the Philippines is our subject, World War II. We'll take a break and be back with Rick.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Rick Bigelow is with us. He is our historian, a patent attorney extraordinaire, and he's going to get into the actual battles for the Philippines. Fire away, Rick.
Well, the third major confrontation that happened was the battle off Samar, and what happened was Kurita turned his central force around and was heading down towards Leyte Gulf, and what had happened was that Halsey had taken his entire Third Fleet north to go after the carriers. Everybody thought that Halsey had left a force behind to protect the Leyte beachhead, but he hadn't. So as Kurita's force comes around the island of Samar, the U.S. forces notice it, and Kincaid's 7th Fleet, which basically only had a couple of escort carriers and some escorting destroyers and destroyer escorts, heads off to confront these major battleships, including the Yamato, that's coming down on heading towards the beachhead. And what could only be characterized as a suicide run, the small destroyers, including the USS Johnston, go after Kurita's big battleships. And Kurita is so overwhelmed by the intensity with which these destroyers and escort carriers launch their planes and come after the big battleships of his force. He thinks it's because Halsey's major carrier task force must be right behind.
Yeah.
So Kurita's forces destroy a whole bunch of the escort carriers and the destroyers that are attacking it, but he more or less chickens out and returns. So he heads back through the San Bernardino Strait, and for all intents and purposes, the Lady Beachhead is secure. And this is the second time where kamikaze attacks go after the U.S. ships, amphibs in the transport ports, and the 7th Fleet ships off Samar. Several of the U.S. ships sank, and several and many of the crew was in the water in shark-infested waters for 2 days before they were rescued, and several were actually eaten by sharks. The last thing that happens is Halsey's carrier fleet does engage Ozawa's Northern Carrier Task Force about 50 miles north and east of Luzon, and he basically destroys what's left of the Japanese naval air forces, and the Ozawa's carrier retreats and heads back to Japan. And for all intents and purposes, the Japanese Navy ceases to be a threat. So the aftermath of this is the largest naval battle in history. Saves the Lady Beachhead. The Japanese Navy loses 4 carriers, 3 battleships. We lost a couple little carriers, destroyers, 255 planes. The Japanese lost over 12,000 sailors. We lost about 3,000. So that was basically it. The Japanese Navy is pretty much out of the war. Kamikazes are going to become more and more of an issue as they were off Okinawa, but victory in the Philippines is basically assured.
Amazing. I mean, so much has to go right. So many things have to happen. So many independent actors have to do the right thing and make the right things happen. It's always in doubt, right, Rick? All these battles.
That's right. And I think the important thing is the other guy is going to try really hard to make sure the right things don't happen for you. So it's very difficult. And there has to be a lot of coordination.
As far as leaders, better and better. There's thousands of heroes. As far as leaders go for the United States, who were the primary heroes in your view?
To me, in the Pacific War, it was a guy who never saw any action, and that's Nimitz.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my favorite authors, Max Hastings, he's a Brit, thinks that Nimitz was the best of all the commanders in World War II. And that's saying something because, you know, the Brits very rarely have anything good to say about the American Navy or the American generals. So I think he just coordinated everything really well. And he was always a steady, wasn't a screamer, wasn't high energy. He was just a real professional. He was good. And MacArthur gets a lot of jabs from his personality and so on and so forth. But his operations in New Guinea and in the Philippines, too, were very good, without a doubt. And I think he had some really good generals working for him, too. So generals and admirals rose to the fore in the Pacific.
Fascinating. Rick Bigelow, thank you so much for this presentation. A big battle. It was the beginning, well, another beginning of the end. It was the continuation of the end for the Japanese, but never was it secure until much after this. Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. Glad to be with you, Bob.
All right. Rick Bigelow, patent attorney extraordinaire, but he's our historian.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The 3 conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.